Hello and welcome to the Super High Yield Anesthesia Podcast, the second edition. This is your host, Scott, the anesthesia resident. All right. Thank you guys for tuning in to the Super High Yield Anesthesia Podcast. Today, I have a very exciting episode for you all. We have my senior, Dr. Mohit Bahat, as well as Dr. Matthew Holzclaw. He's one of our new attendings here at Riverside University. Guys, thank you for being here and welcome to the show.
Oh, yeah, man. Thank you for having us.
Perfect. So today's episode's a little bit of everything. So first of all, you guys all have families, so we're going to kind of talk about things like what's like having kids and family throughout the residency training process. As well as, since we're all on nights together right now, what's like being on working on nights as an anesthesiologist. And lastly, since both of you guys are going to be applying for a fellowship, or Mo, you're doing it now, we're going to kind of go through that process, okay? So with all that said, let's talk about family. So whoever you guys want to go first, like, why don't you guys tell me about your kid and what are they like?
Sure, I can go first. Thanks for having me on, by the way. So I have one child. She is 2.5 years old. Name is Belle. I had her during my CA1 year of residency. She was delivered at Loma Linda, and I had her while I was on my heart's rotation, which had its own challenges, and I was very sleep deprived during that one.
Yeah. I just had my kid's about 5 months old. I'm a CA3. And so he was born back in April at the end of CA2 year. And, it poses its own challenges having a kid in residency, but it's a very grateful experience, and going home is different.
It's like, I eventually want to be in your guys' shoes, but, considering the rigor of, the residency, I don't think anytime soon.
Yeah.
But of that said, you guys kind of touched upon it already, but when during your training did you have your baby, and what was that like for you guys?
So I had Belle during the peak of COVID. My wife was a family medicine resident at Eisenhower. She was 9 months pregnant, waddling during doing her COVID ICU rounds in the emergency room. And so Belle was trial by fire pregnancy there. And then we had her at Loma Linda, which was nice at my training program because I got to pick who did my epidural for my wife. And I actually placed my wife's IV too, which was nice. So we delivered there. And I got to take 3 weeks off is what I took off because I didn't want to delay residency. And since I was on subspecialties, I didn't want to take too much time away from my subspecialty. So we fed her every 2 hours throughout the night, and my wife and I would alternate every 2 hours, so we got 4 hours of sleep each night. So
yeah. My experience was a little different. I was on away rotations. We go to Cedars for cardiac, and so I was over at Cedars while my wife was pregnant. Like I was mentioning earlier to you guys, it was about 5 months I was away, so she was a trooper for that. We did end up going in for induction. She was a G1P0 at the time. And so it was a pretty interesting experience seeing a delivery from a patient side versus all the patients we see here on our L&D as their anesthesiologist. But everything went well, and we came home, had a healthy baby. It's all you can ask for. There was like a law passed, I think it was like in July 2022. Where maternity and paternity leave now does not extend residency. So I definitely took advantage of that. I think that's correct. So I took 6 weeks off, came back, and was just back in general anesthesia. Soon became a CA3. And now here I am with a five-month-old. So it's been poses its own challenges. Mostly sleep deprivation, I think, would be the hardest part of this. But learning how to, raise a kid and still perform as a resident adds another layer of stress to your life, but it's very rewarding.
Especially since anesthesia is an early morning specialty, and we have to be up at the crack of dawn, actually 5 a.m. on subspecialty, 6 a.m. for standard cases. It makes it a little bit more challenging. Yeah,
there's definitely a few, many nights where you're kind of up with the baby, and all of a sudden your alarm goes off and you're like, oh my God, it's 4:30 or 5 or whatever, you're waking up and you're like, shoot, like, where did the night go? But yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. So that's actually going to be the next question that I'm going to ask you guys. So, like, what kind of challenges did you face having a child during residency? Like, you guys already talked about, like, sleep deprivation, like, the schedule is a little different, but what kind of challenges you guys face, not only for you, but also for your spouse?
So for me, the challenge was my wife was a resident at the time as well. And so we have very rigid schedules with long hours. So finding childcare was our top priority. So Belle had been in daycare since she was 2 months old. So my wife was actually studying for her family medicine boards during that first month during her maternity leave, and took it during her maternity leave, her family medicine boards, and then went back to work. And so Belle had been in daycare since she was 2 months old. And on a resident salary, it was challenging to find someone cheap enough with the all-day schedule, 5 days a week, was challenging for us.
Childcare is definitely something that stresses me out, too, because we're kind of getting to the point. Luckily, my wife is a teacher, and so she's had the summer off and gets a lot of time off from that. And so, but we're coming up on the point where we're going to look for childcare. And one of the biggest things with that is, first, like, you're going to trust someone to watch your baby that you've been watching 24/7 for, you know, so much time. And so finding someone you trust is something that stresses you out. And then, of course, finances. As a teacher and a resident, it can be hard to make ends meet because things don't get cheaper. They just get more and more expensive right now. And so childcare is something that we are exploring right now. Another challenge, I would say, with my spouse being at home, you're in the hospital a lot, and when you're in the hospital a lot, you're obviously not at home, and so you miss out on a few things. I mean, you may miss out on milestones, and sometimes it may be hard to help. And so making sure you come back home and do as much as you can be challenging, because you may be coming home from a 14-hour day, may have seen a lot of stuff throughout your day, you've been up all night, whatever it may be, the night before, and still finding a way to help and be a team, I think takes so much communication, and you really got to be on the same page about a lot of things. Otherwise, you're gonna be stressed, and so your tempers can fly, but you got to be on the same page about things.
Yeah, fair enough. So, Dr. Hosklaw, do you think having a spouse that's also in medicine kind of helped out throughout the process, considering you guys know what the schedule is like? Like, can you speak a little bit about that?
Yeah, so she definitely knew just resident schedule in general, and it helped. I guess she understood why I wasn't at home a lot, because our schedule is a little bit more unpredictable than family medicine, or her schedule was, not, because she had her schedule. She had like a month of nights, but she was able to complete that before Belle was born. And so really she was able to have more of a reliable schedule than us being on anesthesia, since we take so much call. That helped with her understanding of it.
And what about you, Mo? Like, your wife's a teacher. So, like, obviously, like, there's very different fields. So, like, how do you feel like that played into the situation at all?
Yeah, I mean, just time at home. She has a lot more time at home than I do, and so I'm grateful for that. But at the same time, she is around a lot of kids when she does go back to work, and she's expressed those challenges to me where she's like, I am taking care of all these kids, and it sucks to be away from my own kid. And so there's all these different perspectives that we have in this, in having a kid in residency. But it's something that, like, we've wanted for a long time. We've been in a long-term relationship for quite some time, close to, like, 15 years now. And it's been, just one life's milestone after another. And we got married a few years ago. So we knew we were going to have a kid in residency. It was always a plan. But we're just trying to, like, navigate the waters and figure out what to do. It's our first kid. And so getting some help from family is important. But we're, 8-hour drive or so, a quick flight. But still, you got to get on a plane to come see us kind of thing. So childcare, once again, sometimes family will help. But other times you got to figure it out.
Fair enough. So, going off of that, like, how did you guys decide when to have a baby? Like you've been in a relationship for about 15 years. Like, why now of all times?
So we knew in residency we were going to have it. I'm 32. My wife is 32. So we knew that that's something that we were going to do. But as a CA1, you're getting your feet under you as a resident. A lot of anesthesia to be learned, getting comfortable in the operating room. And so with that said, we knew maybe as a CA2, later into CA2, maybe as a CA3, we wanted a baby. Me knowing that I was going to do a fellowship, we know that I was going to be away for 5 years, essentially, 5-year residency plus a fellowship. And so there was really not a great time, but there's some times that are better than others. I probably, CA1, it sounds really tough, just because you're just getting to know the OR and how to do anesthesia. And so once you get a little more comfortable, we decided towards the end of CA2 year.
Yeah, fair enough. And what about you, Dr. Holzclaw?
What was the question?
Yeah, sorry. How did you decide, like, timeline-wise, like, when to have the baby?
Oh, I said it was up to my wife whenever she wanted to.
Good.
Nice.
It's a smart man.
Happy wife, happy life, right?
I was pushing for it a lot more for our first one, and she always wanted the time to be better. And my argument was always, it's never going to be a good time, so we might as well just jump in. And then one day she woke up and said, all right, let's do it now. And so, yeah. And I'm very grateful for her because that is the best gift I've ever gotten.
That's awesome. What about you, Scott? You want a baby?
I think eventually.
Yeah.
Eventually. Like, probably not now, though.
Yeah, not now, but
it's like when I have a little bit more financial stability, I would say. But that's something that I'm always interested about because, like, as a resident, you still technically make the median, like, income of, like, the U.S., like, average income.
Yeah.
So then, like, even with that, it's still a bit of a challenge.
Yeah.
So it's like, how?
I think it's the hours.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Like, you do make that salary, but it's at the cost of how many hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
that's fair.
For us, I am super grateful for my wife because she works very hard. But since her schedule is more predictable, she was more of the stable figure for her daughter, dropping off, picking up. She still does the dropping off almost every morning. Because our schedule is still, I'm doing an overnight shift right now. She doesn't do overnight shifts at all. So she had to put her to bed. She has to bring her to daycare tomorrow before going to work. So all of that stability is on her.
Fair enough. All right. And so moving on to the next questions, like, anything you wish you knew before you had a kid?
Not really, man. You just, like, figure it out. Like, I my baby's only 5 months old, and so I'm still, like, very early on in this process. Every single day you're learning something new. You're doing something wrong that you did. You're trying to correct from the week prior and the month prior, and, like, the baby's changing, so you're trying to adapt. But it's a continuous, like, evolution of adapting to the baby, learning, and just making mistakes and learning from them. That's how we do it.
Yeah, I'd say nothing that I wish I knew, because you're going to learn it on the job.
A lot of diapers.
It's the best experience.
Going home is very
fun. Yeah. And honestly, whenever we have a weekend, like, say, her father my wife's dad comes to visit or something like that, or my mom comes to visit and watches her, and we have the afternoon off, we're like, we have so much time now.
Yeah.
And before Belle, we had, like, weekends off, and it's like, what did we do during that time? Like,
yeah, you're so efficient. Another thing is, like, I didn't notice how long it takes us to leave the house now. Like, before, you know, if me and my wife are going out or something, it was just like, you know, grab the keys, you're out of the house. You're out of your driveway in like 90 seconds. Now it's like, oh, you got this bag, you got this, you got that. It takes you like 30 minutes just to get out. And right at the end of 30 minutes, it's happened multiple times where the baby spoils the diaper. And you're like, oh my God, take everything out. You know, you could change the baby. And now it's like an hour. So like being late is just like chronic now.
Huh. Fascinating. It's like, I am definitely the type where it's just put on some pants and get out the door, you know?
Out of there. Yeah.
I feel like I'm the opposite. I just grab baby and go, and then my wife is like, you didn't get this or this or this.
Oh, gosh. All right. And so I guess, like, paternity leave for you guys, it sounded a little different. Dr. Hoskall, you did 3 weeks. Mo, you did six weeks.
Yeah.
So can you kind of speak to, like, how that worked? Did you guys get paid for that time, or how would you even go about getting that?
Yeah, for me, it was like, I was like very transparent with the program. I was like, hey, like my wife's pregnant, couple months in, this is kind of the expected due date. We don't really know, you know, exactly the she has a primary baby. So I let them know. They kind of worked with me. I was very grateful for them. And they would ask me, like, hey, like, this is how much allotted time you got, how much you want to take off. It's not going to extend your residency because of that law that was passed and everything. And so because of all that, I was very grateful. And I did end up taking the 6 weeks. And I was very glad that I did, because there's a lot of stuff that I feel like I would have missed out on if it was just like a week or a few days. You know, there's stories of attendings here who only took a day off or a few days off, and, you know, they were obviously the paternal side of things, but I could definitely see the challenges in that.
So paternity leave.
Oh, so like my paternity leave. My whole goal was not to extend residency, and what I wound up doing was taking my vacations. I had 2 weeks of vacations that I had planned at the beginning of the year that once I knew we were pregnant. I took two weeks vacation back to back, and then a week of sick leave that my chief resident worked out for me. And that's kind of what we did.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Right on. So kind of wrapping up this particular section of the episode, do you guys have any advice for anyone that's considering having kids during residency?
Yeah, my advice would be that you really need to understand the amount of responsibility that you're going to get yourself into. And residency is hard, as hard as it gets sometimes. And so adding that extra layer of work and sleep deprivation and work on top of that can be challenging, but if you're thinking about it, I would say go for it, because it's super rewarding, and it's a moment in your life that you could just push off, but you're going to have to end up doing it, so why not just do it now and get it over with?
Yeah, have kids. We don't want to end up in a world of Idiocracy.
That's right.
That movie. I showed my wife that movie to try to convince her to have a baby.
Right.
It didn't work. But also, whenever you do have a kid, the only real thing that you need to do is just be there. You don't even have to do anything, as long as you're there for your child. So any time that you get, just make time for them.
Yeah,
fair enough. Actually, kind of going off of that, like, I guess it's different as a resident versus an attending, but do you find in anesthesia, is that does it allow time to spend time with your family? So, speaking of spending time with your family, like, do you feel like the field of anesthesia is conducive to having a more family life? Like, I know it's obviously different between resident and attending, but yeah. You guys want to, like, speak on that?
Yeah, as a resident, I think it's still kind of tough. I, you know, as an attending, probably give more perspective on that. But as a resident, you're working a lot. So not only are the days long, but you're going to work a lot of days. We do a good job here where you do get, you know, designated days off, X amount of days per month. And so you just make the most of them and you make them count. And when you're home, you're present and you're not really tied to your phone and just make time for your family, I think is really important.
Yeah. So yeah, during residency, that's what I would do. I'd get off of a night shift. And even if I got no sleep, I would try to sleep for, go home and sleep maybe 2 hours or just as minimum as I could to be functional and then spend time with my family and try to catch up on that. A resident is more difficult because someone makes your schedule for you and you have usually 3 to 4 weeks of vacation that you request and hopefully get, and hopefully it's not taken up by some obligation like a wedding or, you know, something like that. But then an attending, your schedule is how you want it to be. And so my whole goal as an attending was I don't want to be at work full time. So I'm only 0.8 FTE, which means I work 80% of full time here. So I get at least one day off a week. And then I also get all of my vacations, and I can actually put in requests for days that I want to work, or for this job here, I'm required to work one 24-hour shift on a weekend a month and then 3 overnight shifts a month. And I can request those however I want, basically.
That's pretty sweet.
That sounds awesome.
That sounds pretty sweet.
It's like, well, for us, it's like, you're doing a 24, you're going to like it. Fair enough, fair enough. So at least there, you know, there's something to look forward to. Light at the end of the tunnel. All right, thank you guys. So I guess we'll wrap up that part for the family stuff, and let's talk about fellowship. So I guess Dr. Holzclaw, I guess we'll start with you. You are applying to sleep medicine?
Yes, sleep medicine. So all the fellowships that anesthesia can apply to, the more common ones are cardiac, pediatric, acute pain, chronic pain, OB-GYN. And then some of the more niche ones are sleep medicine, addiction medicine. There's hyperbaric medicine that we can apply to. And I think that might be it.
Crit care.
Oh, crit care. That's one of the well-known ones. And so, a lot of them are just subspecialties within anesthesia, and it doesn't really change your job too much. It changes what cases you would be doing. So if you do a cardiac fellowship, you hopefully, or your goal is most likely going to be doing more cardiac cases in your near future. My goal for doing sleep medicine is I wanted to get out of the OR and have a more predictable schedule for my family. And so that's what I'm applying to this cycle. Applications opened up in just last month, right? I think so.
I'm in the previous one.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, just about.
Yeah. So waiting on interviews right now, and then match will happen at the beginning of next year, and then it would start July 1st for me. And so my eventual plan is to do like 2 days a week of anesthesia and 2 days of sleep medicine, and still have one day off a week. Yeah. So 2 clinic days where I know that's my biggest complaint about anesthesia is the unpredictability of schedule. And so, yeah, if you work a day shift, I'm sure you guys can attest to this, but, you don't know if you're going to get off at 1 or 7 o'clock. Such a huge variability. And so at least if you have a clinic schedule, you know your last patient's going to be at this time. So, and you can actually cancel your patients too if something comes up. Anesthesia, you cannot cancel your patients just because something came up. Someone else has to cover for you. So,
I think they need an echo.
Yeah,
it's, urgently.
It's pretty hard to make plans if you're in the ORs because you don't know what time things are going to fly. But for me, I'm applying chronic pain. The application process started just about a year ago. I submitted my application. I think they opened up about a year ago. I submitted in December or January, and now I am. It's now in September 2023. So about 9 months later, all my interviews are done, and I am going to be submitting my rank list this week. And there's a quick turnaround time from submitting your rank list to actually matching. And so rank lists are due September 13th, and you will actually match September 27th. And so within a couple of weeks, I'll find out where my fifth year will be and where I'm going to be taking my family and my little baby. So we're pretty excited to see what's on the horizon here.
Yeah, that's very exciting.
Yeah.
It's kind of coming up fast.
Yeah, it's been a long, drawn-out process, though, because you apply, like I said, you start working on your applications, you start collecting your letters, start working on your personal statement, putting your application together takes a little while, and started that about a year ago. Submitted, like I said, December, January, and then now 9 months later, I'll find out.
Oh, gosh, it's like applying for residency, but part two.
Yeah, it's like through the same program through ARIS.
Okay, so I was gonna ask that too. So for pain, is ARIS or ERAS, is it same for sleep medicine as well?
It is. It's so funny because for residency, my mom was trying to help me, and she called me one day and she was like, I found this program that I think could help you. You should definitely take a look at it. It's called ERAS or something like that. I was like, oh, okay, thank you. It's a required one, but I appreciate you looking into it for me.
Oh, really? It's like, hey, they're trying, man. They're trying. Fair enough. Like, every time I hear that, like, I just get a little bit palpitations from that. Yeah. So how much did you end up spending on applications?
For I think it depends on how many programs you apply to. I think mine application with all the fees and everything came out to about $700. But luckily, ever since COVID, interviews are more virtual. There's only a couple of chronic pain fellowship programs in the country that will do in-person interviews. And so about all of mine, 100% of my interviews were over Zoom, or they use a Thalamus platform, which is an interviewing software. And so, yeah, it was pretty sweet. You're just sitting in your own house, you know, giving all these interviews and not buying plane tickets and hotels and rental cars and food, and because that would have added a substantial cost to you know, applying.
Yeah, like I was the first cohort to apply during COVID, so we were the first ones to go through like the video process, and as you said, it was nice not having to spend like anything on interviews. Yeah, but let's see. So just to kind of get the timeline down. So basically, if you want to go straight from residency to fellowship, you started applying during your CA2 year. Is that correct?
Essentially, your entire CA2 year, after a few months into your CA2 year, September-ish, you're going to be working on your application. And then you'll find out, depending on which fellowship you're going into, anywhere between, I think, like June and September.
Okay, so in regards to the process of applying, obviously we're going to need letters of recommendation. So, like, how many do you need for either specialty, and like, how, what was your strategy in obtaining those letters?
Yeah, you need a few letters. I think there's a couple of requirements as to who writes your letters. I think you got to be in good, you know, obviously academic standing. And so your PD is going to vouch to that. So you need a PD letter, definitely specialty specific letter. So if you got pain attendings around, you got to get letters from them. Any kind of pain people, staff, I think you would. It's like, it's no longer like general letters. It's very specialty specific letters that, as far as pain was concerned.
for sleep medicine. It was just general letters for me. One had to be the program director, and then the other, there had to be three letters total. And so I just found two other attendings that I liked and had them write it. And this is also around the time ChatGPT came out. So I asked my attendings, I was like, if you don't feel like writing something out, you can use ChatGPT. And they did. And
yeah, it's pretty sweet. Have you used ChatGPT?
You know, like me and my girlfriend, we tried doing it. It's like, write a strong letter and then write a mediocre letter. Yeah. And it's actually like just...
It's pretty good. Yeah, it's pretty good.
So it's pretty fascinating, like how like you can use AI to solve your problems.
Yeah.
Honestly, I've had some students ask me for letters right here, and I use ChatGPT for it.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet. You do have to have some kind of input. Like, I think you do need to have, like, it's very basic, like kind of have like these general statements or specific, whatever it is. And then it will do a badass.
That's,
I also had it write my personal statement too.
No way.
Well, that's pretty sweet.
Fair enough. Huh. That's something to consider. All right. And, let's see. And lastly, is there anything you kind of wish you knew now that you wish you knew while you're doing the application process?
I can't say that there is. It's kind of unfortunate that for anesthesia, it wasn't this way for sleep medicine. And since I'm applying for sleep medicine as an attending, I'm delayed a year, and so I got to work. And I wanted to do this year of work anyway and not go straight into it so I can make an attending salary for a little bit. But it's kind of unfortunate that you have to apply for a subspecialty starting at the beginning of CA2, even before you've had hearts or peds or a lot of the subspecialties. So it's kind of unfortunate.
Yeah, I would say exposure. It's kind of hard. You got to make your decisions quick. So your CA1 year, you're just going to be trying to learn how to do anesthesia. All of a sudden, it's a few months into your CA2 year, you got to make a decision about what fellowship you want to go into. And so I think integrating specialty rotations early into the curriculum is beneficial.
Yeah, that's fair. Like, honestly, I didn't consider fellowship at all until like I did this, the acute pain, chronic pain rotation. I'm actually kind of leaning towards applying for acute regional because I love doing blocks. It's like playing video games, man. It's awesome.
Yeah. I think the current anesthesia market has really changed the residents' perspective on whether to do fellowship or not. A lot of residents currently are leaning towards not doing a fellowship from what I'm hearing throughout the state of California, at least, because just the market that we're in. A lot of people want to strike while, you know, the iron's hot.
Do a fellowship and make a bank.
Yeah.
No, one of my attendings actually called a fellowship the $400,000 mistake. He was very against us doing fellowships because, you know, you lose a year of salary and most specialties won't make up for that. So
that's a complete opposite of what our PD wants us to do.
It wasn't my PD that said it. It was just one of the attendings.
Oh, one of the attendings. Gotcha. Fair enough. Okay. All right. So thank you guys so much for your input and everything. And hopefully we'll have you back sometime in the near future.
Yeah, Scott, I'd do it again. Thanks, man. Yeah.
Awesome. All right. So that just about does it for this episode. Unfortunately, we all had to go back to work, cutting our session a little bit shorter than I intended. We were all on night shift together, and then around that time, we had a case to start. But yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed the conversation we had with Dr. Hosclaw and Dr. Bahat. And yeah, I hope you guys learn a little bit about what it's like having a family during residency, as well as a brief overview of the residency, or sorry, the fellowship application process. Especially in regards to sleep medicine as well as pain. If that's something that you like more of, definitely reach out on the social media links that I have in the description of this episode. And I would really love to hear from you. From now on, I don't think I'm going to do the pre and post survey Like I had in previous episodes, I would just appreciate it if you give a rating on Spotify, Google Podcasts, or whatever you're listening to this podcast on, and leave a comment. I want to improve this podcast for you guys and give you content that you guys actually want to listen to. Again, if you have any suggestions or requests for specific episodes, feel free to leave comments or reach out on social media. I should be trying to start a Reddit page as well sometimes today, because that's mainly my source of social media personally. But all right, that'll be all for today. This is Scott, the anesthesia resident, and I look forward to seeing you in the next episode.